NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back into another Grip Locked preview show, this time for the Waco Annual Charity Open.
Otherwise known as Waco.
Also known as Waco. Very what an clever. Acronym.
I love thought. That. Very
it's in
clever.
Waco, Texas.
I want to know. I want to know if they tried it or if they literally they had to.
They
just
tried.
saying Waco Annual in that in that order is kind of weird. So I guess they tried.
No, they definitely tried.
But I love it.
They didn't just stumble on it.
Yeah,
there's no way.
Very fun.
This year though, it's going to be a slightly different tournament because we're going to be playing two courses. So Brazos East is the course that this tournament has historically been at. That is still going to be a part of it for two rounds, also known as the Beast. They will also be playing Lake Waco, which is a golf course, disc golf course hybrid. We'll talk about both of them. Brazos East looks basically the same this year, but it skips old hole 15 to make room for a new hole 16 by the water. So 16, 17, 18, all three now have water in play.
Yeah.
Thinking of that, I don't know how that happens, but it does.
Just let it happen.
So just let it happen. Just roll with it.
More water, better.
More water, the better. If we take a look at some stats prepared for us by Edwin here, first notable thing is the Beast actually plays as the fifth easiest course to par, with the average event score at Waco being almost 11 strokes under it, down there at 10.8 under par for the event in 2023. If we head over to the birdie rates by par, it's almost 10% above the tour average, coming in at 41%, with the tour average being 33%. So the course in general plays relatively easy. It is not an easy course, but it plays relatively easy for these touring pros. And we can also look at some notable performances here at the Beast. Again, only one of the two courses, but I want to pull from this graphic two specific ones here that I think will be interesting to see how they play this year in comparison to this, which is Simon Lazat and Anthony Barella. So this is basically looking at players who have played two Waco tournaments since 2019, putting them all together on their average score, top finish, all of that stuff. You have Anthony Barella is 101st on that list, Simon Lazat in 39th on that list. Both of those players, though, I think this is, again, only with the Beast. I think the addition of Lake Waco might make this tournament swing a little bit more in their favor. Now, jumping into the Lake Waco preview, it looks to be a great addition to the event. In my opinion, really, from watching the practice round, it doesn't really feel like a golf course to me.
Yeah, I think, it doesn't stand out necessarily. And I think it always helps when you have a golf property that's a little more worn down. Like it doesn't look like a pristine country club. So therefore, I think it's a little bit easier to disguise. The cart paths are kind of the giveaway, and it doesn't play straight down fairways. I honestly, the property, the way they've laid it out, it reminds me of like a Music City or a Jonesboro, where you have like sprawling fields, little bits of like there's quite a few like uphill shots, and then they do guarded greens as well. So they definitely went the route of being very intentional to not just make it play straight down fairways. I think they're almost playing across the fairways more. I think I'll be curious to see how people react to it. I think we've heard like some of the pros are not a huge fan of the course. I think it's one of those courses that demands, anytime there's guarded greens, pros seem to hate that.
Yes.
It's like until it's explained to it. It's funny, when I was watching Brody's practice round, and I think it was like hole three or four, there's like a tree over top of one of the baskets that guarded like an entire side of the hole, and Ezra immediately goes like, well, this hole's trash. And Brody kind of goes like, well, no, you just got to land like over here. And he's like, well, no, I guess it is good. It's like, it's good to have like greens that are partially guarded. It's like, once you explain to them, then it like makes sense. Like, no, like it, there's a purpose for that tree there. No, somebody didn't just think like, let's just put the basket under a tree. Now, that I'm sure that does happen sometimes, but I think there's a lot of unconventional shots. It kind of reminds me to the way people reacted whenever the Open at Austin happened last year, where I thought a lot of the shots that were being demanded were really cool because they were not traditional. It was not stock hyzers and just forehands. But that being said, I do think this course does provide a ton of opportunity for distance throwers. I saw a lot of shots where the ability to go up and over things is going to be like a humongous advantage. If you and you had to be able to throw very far. I mean, even watching Brody and Ezra, guys that throw far, like they were having to really pump some shots. But what I saw is that if you are not a distance thrower, you are going to have to throw way more demanding shots down on those lower lines, trying to avoid tree branches and such. Whereas if you're a bomber that can really get up over everything, the advantage is going to be huge.
Well, also on a lot of the holes, like one of them, for instance, was coming to my mind is like to even clear the water to get to a landing zone. Yeah, was like at minimum
400 plus
400 feet.
Yeah.
So if you're a distance thrower, even on a hole like that, you have a drastic advantage because of the ease of clearing the water.
Yeah.
Where if you're a guy who is, you know, topping out tour distance at like 450, 475,
right,
it's going to be a lot harder. You might have to get a disc that pushes up a little bit or gets a little turn. And if the wind picks up,
yeah,
good luck.
The wind, a lot of this course seemed like it was played nose up.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to describe it, either throwing uphill or having to throw up in the air over trees. And whenever that happens, if the wind picks up, and you talk about the water clearances, when it gets windy, those players who don't have as much arm speed are trying to rely on a disc to get a full flight and trying to flip up, and doing that into wind is much more difficult than the guys who can just throw something stable flat the whole way. So yeah, I think the layer that this adds to this event is going to be very fascinating, because before, I feel like Waco was an event that, you know, it's been around long enough that it was just kind of like the guys who, it produces weird results because like guys whose games were just clicking, because anybody could score there if their game was clicking, just the way that course was laid out. But I think this course reflects a lot more of what we see on the Pro Tour nowadays. And, you know, stuff that we'll see when we play courses like Portland and such, where they are a little bit more open. They do allow guys to cut it loose a bit. And, but then they're also featuring that heavy OB, a lot of par fours and fives, those multiple shot holes. So I think that we are going to see a tournament that looks way different than anything
we've seen. Absolutely. Now, this course definitely is a lot more open, which is a really good compliment to the Beast, because the Beast has that very technical wooded stretch in the middle there. But it, like you were mentioning, it does have tons of OB where bad shots are still going to be punished, and even if you do have that big distance and you do decide to get aggressive and bite more off, it comes with a lot of risks. But one advantage I think the distance throwers will have isn't off the tee, but more so you want to be as close to a lot of these greens as you can, because they're so technical.
Yes.
There's a lot of OB within like 20, 30 feet of the basket where you don't want to be having to throw a driver in and worry about it skipping. You want to be able to be close enough to have a zone or an approach putter or something, yeah, like that, where it can hit and sit or like get a little check skip. And so the approach shots into these greens are going to be crucial.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something where a distance thrower is going to have an advantage, is they're going to be have a lot more just control shots in versus, yeah, still having to pump something. But I also really like the scoreability of this course with that danger still, because I think this is going to provide a really wide spread in from the practice rounds. I could be completely off on this. It looks scoreable, but it also looks like you could blow up.
Yeah, that was one of the first things I noticed on a couple of the par fours, where I was seeing the comparison of like the best drive versus the safe one, and just like sometimes you couldn't even see where the basket was or get a good look at the green, or other times it's like, oh, there's 20 feet from the basket, there's OB, and then there's water behind. There were a lot of greens where that will certainly be an advantage. And yeah, it does seem scoreable, but some of those tee shots, like, I think it's just gonna be interesting to see the way people attack it. And you know, another interesting thing is a lot of the par threes don't have any OB, which is interesting. I think a lot of times courses try to utilize even more OB on the par threes, but this course doesn't. So I think there's a lot of holes where there's so many different lines people can take that it may take the players a round to kind of get a feel for it, and then maybe score better that second round. But yeah, I'm not really sure where it's going to land. I'd like to think it's going to score tougher than the Beast, just because, you know, the best players that are playing in Waco and having the best weekends typically shred. I mean, you can see with that average score to par last year, but I don't know. Yeah, it's anytime you have a new course, it's tough to know what to expect.
Yeah, I think one thing I will say is I think I like the finishing stretch at the Beast more than the finishing stretch at Lake Waco.
Yeah.
So, because we'll see the Beast in rounds 1 and 3, Lake Waco in rounds 2 and 4. But I think I like finishing at Lake Waco as a whole is probably the right decision. I think I like it as a final round, but hole 18 just doesn't seem nearly, and hole 17 even, doesn't see, those two don't seem nearly as consequential or decision-making type holes as 17 and 18 at the Beast do. So I'll be sad to not see it finish there, but I'm excited for what it brings to the tournament.
It's kind of like the signature of that event for years has been that 17-18 finish, because they are like really, really fun holes where so much. I mean, we saw it last year with Kristen Tatar making that comeback. I think it was... was it James? James that did he either, he didn't win. I think he kind of choked it away. On
Kyle 17. Klein took it down.
Yeah, that's right. So we see those crazy swings on those two holes. And I do think that is probably the biggest loss of this new format, is just because, yes, like you can say, there's a lot of mixed opinions about the Waco course, the Beast. I feel like we should have a website at this point that power ranks all the things called the Beast. There's like 100 courses. But yeah, I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to watch and just see how those final holes play at the new course.
Now, looking at MPO this weekend, we have 112 MPO players registered currently as of the shooting of this show. Only 4 below 1,000 rated. That's how deep the field is now.
That's crazy.
I thought that was wild, because I like was just scrolling. You know, I sorted by ratings. I was scrolling. I was like, is this whole field 1,000 rated? There was 4 guys. The lowest rated player, I believe, was like 987.
That's crazy.
So, like, even that. But basically, if you're a 1,000 rated player, you most likely have a 5-stroke ceiling, which means you can get to that 1050 golf, which means there might be 108 players that could realistically, at their best, have a shot at a hot round out here.
Absolutely.
Which is just crazy to think about. Yeah. That's just not the case if you go back a few years ago. So super excited. One player, obviously, all eyes are going to be on this weekend is Calvin Heimberg. He did not have the weekend he would have liked or anyone would have liked at chess.com. But historically, he's played pretty well out here at Waco, and I think his game works pretty well for this new course. How important do you think it is for him to have a bounce-back performance this weekend?
Probably pretty important for him. I think that anytime you're a player with really high expectations, there's always going to be a little bit of pressure going into the season, and the sooner you can shake that off, the better. And like a guy like Calvin, you know, we know what he's capable of, and really the only thing that can hold him, could hold him back, would be maybe getting himself into a bit of a slump and just kind of losing a bit of confidence, because we have seen him in the past, especially with the putter, lose some confidence, and that can start to weigh on you and add up. And it's, and you know, anytime you have any kind of streak going in disc golf, if you're Birdie Smith right now, cover your ears, you can gain momentum and things can snowball. So, you know, if you're playing well, that a lot of times that's more likely to continue. If you had a really good event, you know, if you're AB right now, you're walking onto the practice round thinking, I'm gonna win this week too, like that's just how the attitude carries over. Whereas if you had a tough week, you're thinking, you know, all right, I gotta get it back on track here, you know. I doubt it was one tournament, and he's what, top 30, so like it's not like it was abysmal or anything. I just think there were a lot of expectations there. But it also, you know, new event, first event of the season. I think it'd be very easy to look away if he comes back with a top 10 this week, and it's just kind of like, whatever. It's in the past.
Yeah, I think it's important for him to bounce back if he wants, or if he's going to maintain the same reputation he had. Because, like, this isn't a make-or-break weekend in regards to, like, amount of wins he'll have at the end of the season. This isn't a major. This is, like... But if he wants to still be the guy to beat each and every weekend, then you got to be the guy to beat each and every weekend. Yeah. So coming in, I believe it was 28th, but somewhere around 30th at chess.com, coming into this weekend, you know, if that's still who Calvin Heimberg is as a player, then he's got to be the guy to beat this weekend.
Sure.
So he has to show up and be in contention. There's nothing wrong. You can still go on to have a multiple win season and possibly still be the best player in the world at the end of the year without doing that this weekend. But I do think for his reputation, if his reputation is going to stay what it's been for the past few years, this weekend's important. But you mentioned Anthony Barella. I want to bring him up because obviously he's coming off of the win at the chess.com, got the monkey off his back. But as we mentioned earlier in the past player performance, 101st on this list, which is the rank including all players who've played twice at Waco. His top finish out here, 45th during that time frame since 2019. That is only with the Beast. The addition to Lake Waco definitely tends to tilt things in his favor a little bit, but what are the expectations on AB this weekend?
I think they're high. I think everybody's looking at him now, and so it'd be interesting to see how he handles that. But I do think that this new course sets up dramatically in his favor as one of the best, if not the best, arm on tour. I also think that, you know, we're only looking at two previous events. That's a very small sample size. I don't think his game necessarily, he's very hit or miss with the more technical, touchy courses. And I think a lot of, the beast becomes that, where you got to navigate very, very tight holes. You got to scramble a little bit. And I think he can be very hit or miss with those. I think in this tournament, as long as he can not have a blow up round and just put together two, an average, between those two rounds of the beast, just have an average of just okay out there. And I think he's going to, I think he can still put himself in a position to win. I certainly wouldn't write him off, and his putter's been very good. So that'll always be there as well. I think the sample size there is, you know, if we were still playing all the rounds of the beast, even coming off the win, I would not be favoring him. But with two rounds of the tournament, including the last one being at a course that I think favors him quite well. Because I think another guy low on that list, Simon, is a similar story. I'm not really looking into that too much.
Yeah, for me, I'm in a similar boat. I'm not expecting him to win this weekend. To me, a win for Anthony Barella is a top 20.
Yeah.
Because I think if he's in the mix enough where it's not like he wins at chess.com and then falls off the face of the earth, like if he's in the mix enough where he's on coverage some, you know, maybe his name even gets challenged where he's pushing for like that lead card or win, I think that's a win for him. Because this is kind of a, not a make or break point, but it is a point of like, you just won. It's your first win ever. Was it a fluke? Can you do it again? AB's career has pointed to no, not a fluke. He will be able to repeat that type of success. But when it's your first time doing something, you know, there's always now a different type of pressure where Now there's that expectation. He looked like he might be the guy to beat. He looked like he might go out there and win every tournament this year. But to win every tournament, you got to win this one. Obviously, like I said, I don't think he's going to win this weekend. I don't think this whole tournament sets up for him, but I do think Lake Waco sets up good for him. And like you were saying, if he can hold it together at the Beast, I think he can put himself into contention, but I think a win for AB is a top 20 finish out here this weekend. Now, a player making their season debut, Joel Freeman, he came in 10th place last year and historically plays pretty well at these golf course hybrid style events. What do you think of his chances out here?
Well, I mean, there's guarded baskets, so that sounds like unfortunate course design to me.
It definitely could be.
That sounds like unfortunate course design. I mean, Joel's a good player. Joel's a guy that I'm never going to, you know, pick to win or be like top three necessarily, but it, you know, he never surprises me when he hangs around the top 10, top 15. So I expect he'll do fine at this event, but he's not somebody that I'm, you know, that's like super, super on my radar. But yeah, I'll never be, Joel's a good player. I'll never be shocked to see him up in contention. He's not necessarily somebody who gets within striking distance and then pushes and wins. So.
No, I'm kind of expecting a top 20 finish out of him. I won't be shocked if he's in contention. I won't be shocked if he pushes for a win, but I'm not expecting it.
It's also tough when you jump on tour, that second event, and everybody's got one under their belt that you're going up against. Like, that does make a huge difference. There's a lot of nerves and rust and like self-discovery that that gets to get sorted through in that first event. So when you have to jump in, it's very tough to do that. Like, it's one thing to win the first event of the season when it's everybody's first event. It's another thing to do it when it's your first event and not everybody else's, unless you're Kristen Tatar.
Yes, which we'll talk about that later. But Ricky, right in the mix at chess.com, right in the mix last year at Waco, but historically has a little bit of an up and down relationship with this tournament. He has not won it yet. Zero wins for him out here. Do you think the addition of this new course could make it happen for him?
Rick is such a good all-around player that I think that the new course will set up fine for his game. I think there's a lot of good forehand opportunities and a lot of good like force over backhand opportunities on that course. So I think he'll be a threat out there. I do think, you know, we've seen him play well in Texas for years. Texas States is kind of his thing coming up in a few weeks. So I don't know. I think maybe I've got him penciled in for Texas State, so it's not quite his time yet. Yeah.
There you go. I disagree. I think this could be it for Rick. I think this is where he could take it down. I mean, like I said, historically, I'm looking at what Edwin provided for us. He has the second best round ever at Brazos East, 16 under. He also has a 14 under, so he plays that course well, and I feel like Lake Waco sets up good for him as well. And I feel like this tournament as a whole is going to favor the all-around players, which is where Rick fits. And with his performance at chess.com, it doesn't look like he has any offseason rust. It doesn't look like he's dealing with any injuries or anything like that right now. So I really like Ricky this weekend. I really like Ricky's chances out here this week. And he does typically perform well in Texas. So why not? I mean, there's three events in Texas this year.
It's true.
Maybe Texas Ricky sweep, takes all of them.
The Texas turkey.
I think Valerie Mandahano did the like Portland sweep a few years ago.
Yeah.
With only one of them was an elite. But hey, she swept a state.
It's true.
Maybe Ricky can do it.
The Texas sweep
year.
Would be pretty sick.
Yeah.
That would be
the
pretty
Texas
impressive.
Trio.
Yeah.
Now, Matty O also has a pretty good history out here. Picked up pretty much right where he left off at chess.com. Being Mr. Consistent was kind of just in the mix. Is that kind of what we're expecting out of him again this weekend? Just kind of
totally.
Being around?
Yeah, totally. I think Matty O, like if I had to bet a player to have most top tens at the beginning of the season, it would go Calvin and then Matty O. I mean, the consistency is crazy. And like it was once again at chess.com kind of like not really paying attention. Like, oh yeah, there's Matty O chilling there in like sixth place. Like that's just what he does. And, yeah, I'd expect his ceiling, like now, I mean, obviously he has a win now. It's still not something I'm just going to expect from him, but like he really he'll get up there and take a tied for second or a second place. Like he'll sneak around because he just hangs in there and he plays smart golf. So yeah, I would not be surprised to see him anywhere in that second place to 10th place range.
Yeah, I would be surprised if he won. This doesn't feel, especially with the addition of Lake Waco, it doesn't feel like a Matty O win scenario, but it does feel like there's no, like I said,
he just plays his game.
It favors all around play.
Yeah.
He knows his game. He's going to stick within his game. And I feel like that could easily get him into the top.
Sometimes at an unknown course too, the guys who are willing to just stick to what they know they can do and not try to take risks. Like that is how you'll land yourself in the top 10 when you're talented enough.
Yeah. Now here's a question for you. Who is a player that underperformed to expectations at chess.com that you think could right the ship this weekend?
There is a good bit. I do think that, one player that I think, will be interesting to watch is Adam Hammes at this event. He obviously has had some good history at it. I think the new course will set up fine for him. I think that, another player to look out for is, Isaac Robinson at this event. He had an okay chess.com, but I think that he could do well here. And that's not something that we normally throw into the hat in Texas, but I don't know. I'm trying to decide, like, I think the throwers will do really well, like the big arms at this course, but anytime it's an unknown, sometimes the more accurate guys who can just hit landing zones are going to do really well just because they're going to keep it in play. Another guy, I mean, I watched Ezra Aderholt play his practice round, and I do think that a lot of the shots actually line up to things he can execute. I do think though the players who don't have a forehand, a really strong forehand, are going to have some difficulties. So you can look towards some of those players. I think Big Germ's registered. Could we see Big Germ come in and make a splash?
There
I think
go.
Sexton is also playing.
He played pretty solid last year.
I think that actually could be one that could sneak up on you is Nate Sexton.
There you go. For me, the first thing that came to mind here was James Proctor.
Where did he end up at the chess.com?
So he ended up coming in 28th place at chess.com, and I feel like he could perform really well out here. He to me is a like staple top 15 guy. So 28th, obviously a top 15 guy is going to do that here and there. But I really feel like this weekend, this could be one that he performs really well at. I like him at both courses.
Yeah.
Because he's got the distance. He's got that really dialed in, accurate hyzer play that I think you'll kind of want at Lake Waco. But then we've also seen him have some success at Brazos East in the past. So I think all eyes on James Proctor coming into this weekend. Now let's jump over to FPO, and we're going to throw it to Joe Henderson to give us the storylines.
Hello, everyone. My name is Joe Henderson, and I'm going to be covering all of the latest news for the Disc Golf Pro Tour and Prodigy Presents tournament for the FPO scene. Currently, there are 53 registered FPO players for this event, and we have some more Europeans coming back. They're looking to attack at Brazos East, or better yet known as the Beast. Some of these players include Lefty Anna Kunstein, Heidi Lenya, I'm not sure if this is how you say their names, but just roll with it. And I'm sorry in advance if I'm saying them wrong. And also our world champion, Kristen Tatar. We have some more players coming over and a lot more players registered for this event. So I'm pretty excited to see and go through the list of players that we should watch out for because we've got quite a few now. A few other names that stood out to me that are registered for this event, one being Kona Montgomery. Kona won this event back in 2021. She's played here really well, and I'm excited to see how she attacks. Kona actually just recently recovered from surgery. She had thyroid cancer and ended up getting that removed. And honestly, I am so happy to see her registered for an event again. Disc golf is not the same without you, Kona. We are so happy you're back. Since I'm also from Canada, I have to mention our Canadian superstar, Chantelle Budinski. She's the highest rated player in Canada, as well as she proved herself last year on the Disc Golf Pro Tour when she won the 50th anniversary of the Jim Palmieri's Flying Discs Open. Her putting and her driving and her sidearm, like, she's got it all. I am so excited to see how she attacks at her main sponsor's event. We have Juliana Korver back, and she's been traveling all across New Zealand. She won three events there, and she's looking like her game is pretty top notch. She'll be back for this event for Waco. I'm really excited to see how she plays. She is competing in the FP50 division as well as FPO, and she's making a name for herself time and time again, which, I mean, is no surprise to Juliana Korver. Looking back to last year, we had Ella and Kristen battling it out up until the 18th hole. It was quite a dramatic scene because Ella ended up forcing an error on her drive on the 18th hole, and it ended up going OB. I have a feeling that Ella's going to want to come back with a vengeance on this course because she ended up losing it all on the 18th hole, and that must have just felt so devastating that I think that Ella's going to be really, really fired up to win this one. I think that Kristen also has a really good chance of holding her title because, honestly, it's Kristen Tatar. What else do we expect? She's proved herself last year, she's proved herself the year before, and we all know what she's capable of. But yeah, it's going to be an exciting event. I, for one, am super stoked to watch. All right, guys, I'm going to throw it back over to you.
Now, one thing I wanted to note here quickly from Joe's storylines is since she filmed that, Kona Montgomery has dropped. She was registered for this event as of Monday, but has since dropped. I don't believe this is really any specific, you know, reason. She's still posting on her Instagram, looks to be, you know, really building back to getting her game back. I think it's more she just wants more time. Last I had heard, I think she's planning her return for U.S. Women's in a few weeks. So that is kind of when we'll see the Kona Montgomery return to tour. But she seems to be doing recovering well. She seems to be back doing field work, throwing. I think this morning she actually posted a story where she was said that she was throwing with some power again. And, of course, typical Kona way of working on her putt. So hopefully yeah, she'll be getting back. But I believe U.S. Women's when we'll officially see her. I do want to mention really the two big things I got from Joe here. One, Ella performed well out there last year, as she mentioned. But with the addition of Lake Waco, I really feel like this starts to play towards Ella's advantages over Kristen in this. Am I saying Ella's going to win this over Kristen? No, I'm not saying
say
that. But I'm saying it definitely helps her case having Lake Waco.
No, I would agree with that. I think it's going to be quite interesting. You know, sometimes when you've got skeletons at a course like she will after what happened last year, that can go one of two ways, obviously. You know, sometimes I can kind of catch up to you thinking, like, I need to get back to that spot again. I was able to get there last year, and that can be tricky. And Ella's not the most consistent player out there, and I do think that in order to perform, at least at the Beast, you do have to have some consistency. So I'm not saying she can't, and I do think that the addition of the new course actually does play into her advantage. But yeah, FPO is interesting right now. I think last week, you know, we saw a lot of players perform really well that weren't necessarily, like, Evelina and Henna both played pretty well. And so, it seems pretty bunched up. It's always interesting when Kristen comes back because then we get a real read on what's going on. And, you know, Kristen really didn't play great at Waco last year. It was kind of handed to her. I mean, she had to take it at the end, but realistically it was handed to her. So I think it's going to be interesting to just see where the rest of the field levels out around her. Like, will she and maybe a couple other players separate themselves in the pack? But I don't know. I feel like I might be getting a read this year that, like, that FPO could be pretty balanced. If Evelina can continue to you know, keep the putter just stable, just like a usable tool, then, you know, it's going to be tough to outthrow her. I do think the new course having a lot of OB will be interesting as well, because, you know, that, you know, you can say all you want about, like, okay, it requires more distance shots, but at the end of the day, you got to keep the disc in play. And that is how players like Kristen and Missy beat everybody, is they keep the disc in play.
Yeah. So. Now, Kristen's definitely the one to watch. This is her return. But I do want to point out, I mean, she had a very busy offseason judging by social media, which could either be good or bad. It seemed to still be a lot of practice in there, but there was also a ton of outside sponsorships, trips, etc.
Narratives are going to be crazy if she loses by like 10.
So it'll just be interesting to see. Is she going to pick up right where she left off with the dominance, or is there going to be like a little bit of getting up to speed? My opinion, she's going to pick up right where she left off, but, you know, you never know.
And you know, the thing is, too, is, like, Kristen had off weeks last year. Like, it's not like, yeah, she had a ton of wins, but there were times where it was like, it's like, oh, Kristen's just not, doesn't have it this weekend. Yeah. And she can be a player who goes down and then kind of checks out a little bit. And so, like, I wouldn't be shocked first event of the year coming back over to the States, like, getting reacclimated, you know, if she doesn't have a great event. Like, it wouldn't shock me. I'm not going to be like, oh my gosh, is this the season that Kristen isn't that good? I'm not going to go there, but some people will, and I'll be there to watch.
Yeah. Now, after last week or 2 weeks ago with chess.com, the point standings, I'm in dead last with 1 point. Trevor has 3 and Joe is in the lead with 6. Let's get into the predictions for this week. We'll start it off with MPO. I'll give my top 3 here. I'm still believing in him. I'm not willing to write him off yet. Calvin Heimberg coming in third. I put Gannon Burr in second. I really like him out here. I like him at both courses, and I think that he could really play well. But like I mentioned in the storylines, I think this is Ricky Wysocki's weekend. I have him taking it down.
Those are good picks. I really doubled down on my theory for this event, and I kind of did that last week as well. I kind of read Thrower's course and just double down on it, and it worked. I got 2 of the 3 of the MPO, and I'm kind of doing the same thing again this week, even more extreme. So we'll see how that works out. I basically, everybody I'm picking, with the exception of maybe one guy, has to just survive Brazos East.
Okay.
So third place, I'm taking AB. I do think with that momentum, if he can survive Brazos East, then he's going to, you know, be a contender. I'm going to take Simon in second. I feel like this could just randomly, like, he just kind of randomly pops on.
He does.
And I feel like this could be one. I'm just trying to get ahead of it this year. And I do have Gannon Burr winning. I think this could be, I think this plays a lot to his strengths. I think a lot of the shots, he's a very crafty player. He can throw a lot of different shots. And I think he's comfortable stepping up to a hole, seeing an unorthodox line and being fine with it. Something that Simon is also okay with.
Yes.
And I think that players that are willing to get outside their comfort zone to throw a weird line are going to have an advantage at the new course.
Yeah. Now, Joe seems to agree with me with Calvin Heimberg in third. She has Kyle Klein coming in second, though, and Isaac Robinson taking it down. So three completely different MPO picks from us three. Now, FPO, Trevor, why don't you lead us off?
FPO. So I'm playing a little bit safer this week. I'm still going to take Evelina in third. I do think that she's going to build off of what she did last week. I think that confidence is a huge thing for her game, and realistically, nobody throws better than her. You know, there may be maybe Henna and Holland are like the closest to, and Haley, I guess, when she's playing well, but I think Evelina throws it so well. But then I am going to go with the safer picks. Second and third. I'm going to take Missy in second. I snubbed her last week, and she was like the bread and butter of my picks last year. So I need to stop doing that. I need to keep her in my top three. And then I'm obviously going to take Kristen to win just because statistics.
Yeah. No, I'm also going to take
probability.
I'm also going to take Kristen Tatar to win. I'm not willing to go against Kristen until I've seen it multiple weeks.
Yeah.
I am going to put Evelina Solonen in second, though. I liked what I saw from her at chess.com, and I'm willing to get hurt again. So Evelina, I almost went Kristen, Evelina, Henna, but I'm not that willing to get hurt again. So I put Ella Hansen in third.
I like that pick. I think you got good picks this week.
I mean, obviously she was in the driver's seat of this tournament last year. And like I mentioned, I think the addition of Lake Waco plays in her favor.
Hey, she doesn't have to finish on 17-18.
She doesn't. So we'll see what happens. Now, Joe also agrees with us, Kristen Tatar taking it down. She actually took Holland Handley in second, and she took Missy Gannon in third.
That
so,
top three will get you very far this year, taking that exact top three.
Yeah, that top three is kind of the top three. Now, Joe was able to win the Dark Horse pick last week with Joe's, or last event with Joseph Anderson.
Nice
and she has picked Kayla Visca this week.
That is dark horse. I'm taking Gavin Rathbun. I think that, hey, maybe he's going to be the story this year.
There you go.
He's popping back off.
He could be. I'm taking someone who this is their tour debut.
The other Gavin didn't work for me last week.
That's
true. He almost
did. I'm taking someone who this is their tour debut. They played pretty well at Memorial last week. And give me Drew Gibson.
I like that pick a lot.
I think I like him at both courses, to be honest. I feel like he hasn't played Waco a ton. He's actually skipped it the past, you know, few times.
Brand new ink too.
But yeah, that ink on the back, I think, is going to be what he needs for Lake Waco to really brave the elements out there. He's got an elephant on the back, which stands for stomping out the competition, which is what he's about to do to Joe and Trevor's dark horse
there
picks. Give me Drew. So that's it for our tournament preview of the Waco Annual Charity Open. Hopefully you enjoyed. Be sure to tune into the coverage on the Disc Golf Network, Joe Mez, and any other place that you can find coverage this weekend. And tune back in on Monday when we give you the full recap of all the storylines that go down out there.
When you buy a new house, you might say,
shut the front door.
Winning.
No, seriously, shut the front door. We own this house now.
But you actually need to say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. The local State Farm agent is there to help you choose the coverage you need.
Welcome to my crib. No one says that anymore, but I don't care.
So, just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 5. South Dakota seemed like the perfect place to unplug, but I ended up connecting to the world around me. A world where each sunset was painted, where I felt adventures pulse with every step, and where cold water trickling, pine swaying, and grunting bison became my favorite soundtracks. I just wish I didn't have to leave. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.